Now I have pleasure in asking Brother Roger to speak to us to the subject, Samuel died and all the Israelites mourned him. Brother Roger.
Thank you, Brother Chairman. My dear brothers and sisters in the Lord Jesus Christ and my dear young people. Well, I understand that I'm not allowed to go for quite an hour at the picnic study, and so we'll try and make sure that we go for somewhat less than that. The chairman's getting worried already. You'll remember that right at the start of our studies on last Wednesday, we made the point that there were a series of men that God in his wisdom had appointed for various epochs of time in the work of the truth. And that what we had considered together in the course of our studies on this occasion was the life of one of those epoch-making men, the prophet Samuel. That he might have been a little stern, perhaps a little abrupt, certainly forthright in his labours, but that he was nevertheless a man for his time. A man who had redeemed Israel from the blackness of the era of the judges, and who had ushered in the monarchy. And as we saw last evening, who'd not only ushered in the monarchy, but who'd also established the principles of the prophets in the land as a guiding force and conscience. And we found that whereas there were those before Samuel who were prophets and who exercised the gift of prophecy, that it was Samuel who gave them a sense of organisation. Samuel that established the schools so that the prophetic office as such would continue for many generations to come. And now in this chapter here, in the first of Samuel chapter 24 verse 16, through to chapter 25 verse 1, we've really got the passing of an era, haven't we? And we've got, as it were, the final transfer now of this man here to his counterpart who's going to carry on the work. We've got the transition now from the first side of the yoke fellow to the other side. The reins are being handed over from Samuel over to David. And notice how in those verses that we've read together, we've got the three men all sort of interwoven. We've got Saul, and we've got David, and we've got Samuel. And they're all brought together now in the record at this last critical moment at the time of the death of the prophet. Well, look, we're not going to look at these verses in detail, apart from just to say that we notice with astonishment the words of Saul in the 16th verse. It came to pass when David had made an end of speaking these words unto Saul, that Saul said, "Is this thy voice, my son, David?" And Saul lifted up his voice and wept, and he said to David, "Thou art more righteous than I, for thou hast rewarded me good, whereas I have rewarded thee evil. And thou hast showed this day how that thou hast dealt well with me, forasmuch as when Yahweh had delivered me into thine hand, thou killest me not." And it's evident that David had that same spirit of respect for God's anointed as Samuel had. The same spirit of respect for the Lord's anointed that Samuel had. Before says verse 19, "If a man find his enemy, will he let him go well away? Wherefore Yahweh reward thee good for that thou hast done unto me this day. And now behold, I know well that thou shalt surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in thine hand." You know, aren't these remarkable words? Here's a man who's gone beyond the limit of what he can now ever go back on. As Brother L.G. Sargent says in the book The Sound Mind, on a very remarkable chapter entitled The Mind of Saul, that Saul himself has gone beyond the point of no return. You read verse 20 and it seems amazing, doesn't it? That he, on the one side, he says, in effect, "I know that you're going to be king, and I know that the kingdom's going to be established in your hand, but I'm not going to stop hunting you." Because that obsession now was so great in the mind of Saul that he could no longer control himself. And while for this brief moment he acknowledged the righteousness of David, within the space of, well, just a short moment of time, he'd be back on the trail again, as it were, to hunt that man. It's a dreadful story of the tragic end of a man who finally was eaten out by those principles that he was unable to get to grips with and control in his life. And then, chapter 25, verse 1, "And Samuel died. You know, that must have been a startling blow to everyone in this kaleidoscope of story. To Saul, to David, to the nation, Samuel had died. And to quote a phrase perhaps a little out of context from the book of Jeremiah, there was weeping and lamentation in Ramah for the death of the old prophet. In fact, we're told in the first verse, it says that all the Israelites were gathered together and lamented him and buried him in his house at Ramah. And so it's significant, isn't it? All the Israelites, says the record. It wasn't just that Samuel was some local circuit judge in just a few cities. He really had had an influence, as it were, from Dan to Beersheba. The whole of the nation was plunged into mourning. In fact, if you go through the record, you'll find there's a series of passages where all Israel were affected by Samuel. And now the whole of the nation is together, unitedly, lamenting him at his death, and they buried him in his house at Ramah. And the interesting thing about that, isn't it? If Samuel hadn't lived at Ramah, what would you know about Ramah? What would make Ramah so important? It's really the life story of a man, isn't it, that's made that little town so important. As between the various functions of his office, Samuel trudged back to his beloved town of Ramah and got on with the work of the schools of the prophets. And Ramah's become famous because of the work of that man, because he graced that city with his presence, and it was the scene of so much of his labours. And no doubt, in our own life and the truth, there are many humble places, many quiet towns, many obscure houses, as it were, that have nevertheless been graced by someone that was committed to the work of the truth and has become famous for that reason. You notice what verse 1 says? It says that Samuel died and all the Israelites were gathered together and lamented him and buried him in his house at Ramah, and David arose and went down to the wilderness. And I don't know how you read that verse, but the way I read that verse is that David was there. That David had gone to the funeral. It was a passing of an era, wasn't there? The handing on of a charge. It seems to me that that verse is implying that David had slipped away from the hold where he was and that he'd gone to Ramah, perhaps disguised, but that he felt that he must be there at that time. And having attended the funeral, that he then arose and went down into the wilderness of Paran, no doubt sick at heart because of the loss of this one who'd been his guide and his counsellor in the last years of his life. It seems to me, anyway, to be fitting to imagine that David would have done that thing. One can imagine David, a man after God's own heart as he was, that he would have personally felt an obligation to Samuel in that way to be present at his funeral lamentation on that occasion. And we believe that that's the indication, perhaps, of that verse, that he was indeed there. You know, when you're lamenting people, you tend to review their life's work and to consider what they've done. And that's just briefly what we're going to do by way of closing our studies this morning. In the first of Samuel chapter 7, we notice these words in the second verse concerning the work of Samuel the seer. 1 Samuel chapter 7, and reading from the second verse, it says, "It came to pass, while the ark abode in Kirjath-Jearim, that the time was long, for it was 20 years, and all the house of Israel lamented after Yahweh, and Samuel spake unto all the house of Israel, saying, If ye do return unto Yahweh with all your hearts, then put away the strange gods and Ashtaroth from among you, and prepare your hearts unto Yahweh, and serve him only, and he will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines." You see that verse 2 says that after a period of long years, a long time, that finally the whole house of Israel lamented after Yahweh. And that we believe that hidden in those 20 years that led up to that drama in the nation was the quiet work of Samuel. Mizpah, Bethel, Ramah, Gilgal, Dan, Beersheba, all over the place, Samuel quietly went from city to city, town to town, group to group, and for 20 years he laboured until finally Israel lamented after God because they acknowledged the state into which they had sunk. You see, it took a long time.
believe that Samuel was at work for all those years. In other words, verse 2 is not just simply saying that Israel suddenly decided to lament before God. There was the work of one man in Israel who finally brought the nation to that moment of recognition. See, the work of the truth doesn't happen overnight, does it? It took Samuel 20 years to bring the nation to that point. 20 long, arduous, laborious, patient, faithful years. How long have you been at work in the truth? You know, sometimes we look at ecclesial life and we say, oh, why can't we fix that? And this is no good and that needs to be changed. It takes time. It took Samuel 20 years. But he never gave up. He always persevered. And the net result was that he's a man that successfully re-energized that nation in spiritual values and who finally brought them to the point where they were truly repentant before their God. In the first of Chronicles chapter 9, it's a passage we've already looked at last night just briefly, but we refer to it again this morning. Not only was he successful in bringing the nation to that point, that major turning point in their history where they came back to God, but we're told in the 22nd verse of the first of Chronicles 9 that all these which were chosen to be porters in the gates were 212. These were reckoned by their genealogy and their villages, whom David and Samuel the seer did ordain in their set office. And what we're being told, therefore, in this verse is that he planned the orders of duties which were associated with the worship of the tabernacle. He planned the orders of duties which were associated with the worship of the tabernacle. So Samuel saw that it's all very well bringing a nation back to God, but there needs to be a system of worship that will make sure that those things continue. So he says, I'm going to organize that. It's no good getting the nation to the point where they say we want to turn back to God and there's nothing to make it carry on. He says we need a whole organizational structure that those principles of worship might be maintained. He says, I'm going to do that. And he set it all out, all the duties, all organized in collaboration here with David. It says that they did ordain them, or as the margin properly says, they did found them in their set office. You see that word set office? It's probably actually not a good translation. Actually, the Hebrew word is the word emunah, E-M-U-N-A-H, from the word aman. And it's actually more properly rendered faithfully, or faithfulness. So David and Samuel chose the orders of people, and they were ordained into those orders on the basis that they would faithfully discharge their duties. I'll give you an example. If you come to the second of Chronicles chapter 34 and verse 12, we've got the same word used there, the word set office. Second of Chronicles chapter 34 verse 12. This is the time of Josiah. And the men did the work faithfully. There's the word set office. They executed their office with a spirit of faithfulness and integrity. Same word. If you come back to the 31st chapter of Chronicles, 2nd of Chronicles chapter 31 verse 12, we're now back to the days of Hezekiah. Hezekiah commanded to prepare chambers in the house of Yahweh, and they prepared them and brought in the offerings and the tithes and the dedicated things, and they did it faithfully in their set office. So the same principle was at work in the days of Hezekiah. If you come back to the 2nd of Chronicles chapter 19, we're now back to the days of Jehoshaphat. And in the days of Jehoshaphat, in the ninth verse, it tells us that Jehoshaphat charged them, saying, thus shall ye do in the fear of Yahweh, faithfully, with a perfect heart. The same word again, set office. So you see, when you think about it, every major epoch in the history of that nation, from the time of David, was characterized by that principle. Samuel sets the orders, and he says, I'm going to choose men that are going to do the job faithfully. And the next major epoch in the history of the nation after David is really the next rise in the days of Jehoshaphat. And Jehoshaphat stands up and he says, I want men that are going to do the job. Well, he says, I want them to do it faithfully. That was the principle that Samuel had established long before. And along comes Hezekiah later on, and there's a revival in the land. He says, I want the Levites to do their job. Well, he says, I'd like them to do it faithfully. That was the spirit of Samuel right from the beginning. And along comes Josiah in the 2nd of Chronicles 34, and he says, I want that job done faithfully. And they all followed the standard that was set by Samuel. So he didn't just organize the orders, but he ordained them on the principle that they would execute that commission with a spirit of integrity. That's who he wanted. And he didn't just do that, but he realized that it's all very well organizing everything, but you've got to have some way of maintaining it. And in the 1st of Chronicles chapter 26, we're told that Samuel organized that as well. He got the nation back on the track. He'd made sure there was a system of worship that would be faithfully implemented. Now let's make sure that that system can be maintained. And in the 26th verse of the 1st of Chronicles 26, it says that Shelomith and his brethren were over all the treasures of the dedicated things, which David the king and the chief fathers, the captains over thousands and hundreds, and the captains of the host had dedicated out of the spoils won in battles, did they dedicate to maintain the house of Yahweh, and all that Samuel the seer and Saul the son of Kish and Abner the son of Ner and Joab the son of Zeruiah had dedicated, and whosoever had dedicated anything, it was under the hand of Shelomith. You see, there's a whole lot of names in verse 28. All sorts of people gave of the spoils of war for the maintenance and upkeep of the house of Yahweh. But you see who's first in all that list? Not Joab, not Abner, not Saul, not David. The first name out of all of those is Samuel. He's the one that started that principle. There's plenty of others that followed suit, but he got it underway. And in the 27th verse, the word maintain the house means it's quite a strong word in the Hebrew. It means to fortify, to strengthen, to establish. So there was a good idea there, wasn't there? That was the dedication of the spoils of war for the maintenance of the tabernacle. And lots of people in Israel said, that's a good idea. Who started it? Well, it was Samuel's idea. So that the whole system of the worship of God could be maintained. In the 2nd of Chronicles chapter 35, and again we looked at this passage last night, in the 2nd of Chronicles chapter 35, and verse 17, it says, and the children of Israel that were present kept the Passover at that time, and the Feast of Unleavened Bread 7 days, and there was no Passover like to that kept in Israel from the days of Samuel the prophet. There was no Passover like to that kept in Israel from the days of Samuel the prophet. And when you think about that verse carefully, what it seems to be implying is that the measuring stick of how good the Passover was in the days of Josiah was, well, let's go back to the last time there was a wonderful Passover kept. We get right back to the days of Samuel the prophet. He's the last measuring stick for the fervency of the keeping of the feasts. So Samuel was one who also revitalized the standards and the fervor of the nation's celebration of the feasts. And when Josiah comes along to keep the feast, it's measured off against the days of Samuel. As if there was the last time when such fervency of feeling in the keeping of Yahweh's feasts had been seen in Israel. We don't need to look at this one because we looked at it last night. In the 1st of Samuel chapter 19 and verse 20, he established the schools of the prophets to continue the direction of the nation. So he dealt with the nation as a whole. He'd implemented the system of worship. He'd ensured that it could be maintained. He'd revitalized the feasts. And he'd made sure that there were always prophets there to give spiritual guidance to the nation as a whole. In the 1st of Chronicles chapter 29, First of Chronicles, chapter 29, we read these words in the 29th verse. Now the acts of David the king, first and last, 1 Chronicles 29, 29. Now the acts of David the king, first and last, behold, they are written in the book of Samuel the seer, and in the book of Nathan the prophet, and in the book of Gad the seer, with all his reign and his might, and the times that went over him, and over Israel, and over all the kingdoms of the countries. See, in the margin against the word book it says, history, or words. They are written in the history of Samuel the seer. And he didn't just write the history of David, and the history of the times that went over Israel, but in the first of Samuel, which we won't turn to, in the first of Samuel chapter 10 and verse 25, we're also told that he wrote the manner of the kingdom. Wrote it in a book and laid it up before Yahweh. And we believe that the manner of the kingdom, which he wrote in the first of Samuel chapter 10 verse 25, was in fact the constitution of the kingdom. The ecclesial guide of the day. He wrote it in a book and laid it up before Yahweh. And no doubt David later on would use the suggestions of that constitution that Samuel had written down. So here was a man who found time to write a history of the days in which he lived, which recorded the transition of Israel to the monarchy. So he was a very busy person, wasn't he? In fact, he laboured unceasingly as a judge. 1 Samuel chapter 7, verse 15. He laboured as a prophet. 1 Samuel chapter 3 and verse 20. He laboured as a priest. In the 1 Samuel chapter 7, verse 9. And I see I haven't given the last reference. He laboured as an intercessor in the 1 Samuel chapter 12 and verse 23. Now when you stop and look at all of those things, you'd have to say that he was a busy man. Where did he find time to do all that? How did Samuel find time to do all those things? Many of which probably were done in the declining years of his life. In the time that we've looked at, I believe that much of that was done as an old man. In the last few years of his life. In his hometown of Ramah. Well, he did it because he was Samuel the Dedicated. That's what the truth's all about, isn't it? The truth's all about dedication. The truth's all about believing the truth so powerfully that we're prepared to give our entire lives to it. The best of our abilities. And there was no one in Israel that would have doubted that Samuel was a man who not only had wonderful ability, but that he used that ability for the good of the truth and for the service of the truth. I doubt that any of us can match the breadth and the extent of his labours. Now these studies were entitled Samuel the Seer. If you come to the 1 Samuel chapter 9, which is where our studies started. We're told this in the 9th verse. 1 Samuel chapter 9 and verse 9. Before time in Israel, when a man went to inquire of God, thus he spake, come and let us go to the seer. For he that is now called a prophet was before time called a seer. And yet, interestingly enough, there was a difference between the two, and Samuel is more frequently known as Samuel the seer, not the prophet, but the seer. He's known as the prophet in the New Testament, but he's more particularly called Samuel the seer. The difference between the two words is very simple. You see, we imagine that a prophet is someone that makes predictions. Of course, A prophet in Israel was not really someone that made predictions, as someone that was a forth-teller of God's will and purpose. Sometimes it did involve predictions, but more specifically, the prophet was one who told forth God's will. And much of the work of a prophet was to speak about present things as well as future things. So a prophet might make predictions. In fact, the root of the word for prophet means to speak either by prediction or by means of normal discourse. But a seer. Well, do you know what the word seer means? It means one who sees. In other words, it's exactly what it sounds like even in the English. S-E-E-R, the seer. And the idea of a seer was one who did see ahead into the future. So you see, all seers were prophets. But not all prophets were seers. You could be a prophet that spoke forth God's mind in the nation without ever having a vision of the future. But a seer did. A seer was a seer of future things and of the divine mind. And I suppose the lesson that out of all that we have considered together in the life of Samuel is this, that he was indeed the seer. He didn't just see visions. He didn't just make predictions. He saw ahead for the needs of his nation. That's what he did. He saw ahead for the needs of his nation. He was the seer of Israel's needs. And that's what the Ecclesia needs today. People that don't just live in the present, people that think ahead. People that see ahead the implications of the next 2 years and 5 years and 10 years. If Christ doesn't come, what the Ecclesia is going to need and how we could best prepare for that. That's the greatness of this man's work. He was truly Samuel the seer in that way. He had a loving care and a regard for his nation that caused him to look ahead and to make appropriate plans for their well-being and future. And long after Samuel had died, and the golden age of Israel's history was well established under the reign of their most illustrious king David, I wonder if Israel recognised in those days how much they owed to the man who'd gone before the king. A grand man, upright and full of integrity in all his ways. Well, we've looked over the course of the last few days at Samuel the humble, at Samuel the upright, Samuel the counsellor, Samuel the intercessor, Samuel the faithful, Samuel the compassionate, Samuel the depressed, Samuel the anointer, Samuel the succourer of those in need, Samuel the prophet. He was all those things, and many more besides. And if we could, brothers and sisters and young people, but even take up a fraction of what that great man did in the oldness of his years, then we would be blessed indeed in our own activities in ecclesial life. You know, one of the most wonderful things about the kingdom will be to be able to walk up to a person like Samuel and say, I've always wanted to meet you. I'm Brother So-and-so, and although we've never met, I actually know you very well. And that will be one of the joyous things of the kingdom, isn't it? To be able to shake hands with a man that you feel you've drawn close to in the divine narrative, you've understood his spirit. May it be our prayer, brothers and sisters, that that day might soon come, when we will see him in the kingdom, and David, and all those who laboured in that day. The vision of a man who saw ahead and who carefully and wisely prepared for the needs of his people. The life and times of a man who has exhorted us all, Samuel the seer.